This is the European edition of Breaking Banks, the world's number one fintech podcast and radio show. We bring you the European unicorns, startups, founders, regulators, and leaders innovating the rapidly evolving fintech scene today. A truly localized podcast with both English and local language content with some of the world's most well-known hosts and influencers in the fintech sector globally. Join us every week as we explore what makes the European Union a phenomenal proving ground for many of the fastest growing fintech plays in the world today. Okay, let's roll.
Welcome to Breaking Banks Europe, the number one global fintech radio network. This is episode 223, news from the fintech front, March 2024. And today I have Urana, the lead editor of the papers, and David, CEO of Banking Reports London. That's a brief intro, but I'd like them to introduce themselves as well.
Hello, and thank you for having me. So yeah, I'm Urana Efrim, and I'm a lead editor at the papers in the banking and fintech team. My main focus here at the papers are topics including open banking, open finance, and embedded finance. And in terms of what we do here at the papers, we are a specialized online platform, a global one, in payments and fintech. Thank you again for having me.
Super, great having you here. David, on to you.
Thanks, Liz. It's great being here. I advise bankers all around the world about innovation, digital transformation. I work with CEOs, boards, executive management of market-leading banks. I have been providing my services in over 50 countries globally.
Wow, that's fantastic. And we were just speaking yesterday, so I'm going to dive into the content because I'm really excited about it, about some legislation from the Swedish Central Bank to protect cash. When all of us are going cashless and they're going to protect cash, what do you think about that?
Right. So basically, there are two underlying questions. One is to remain near cashless or to go fully cashless, entirely cashless. And the second question is, if we want to go entirely cashless, do we want to do it with CBDCs or without CBDCs? For example, only with bank account money, e-money. And actually, currently, there are two different answers to the first question. Some economies are letting merchants go, physical merchants go spontaneously cashless, for example, the Netherlands. Others are protecting the cash, so to speak, physical cash, UK, Sweden, and recently there is a very serious draft regulation in Hungary. I am originally Hungarian. By the way, in the midterm, my answer is yes, we will go entirely cashless. And to the second question, my answer is that we will do it through CBDCs across major economies.
So, and please say what CBDCs are for those who might not know.
Right. CBDCs are central bank digital currencies, digital form, digital reincarnation of cash, the direct liability of central banks.
Thank you for that. Now, when we were talking earlier, I said, you know, I live in the Netherlands and I see a lot of companies wanting to go cashless because it adds a lot of transparency. And you were saying that, yes, it does, but there are some pitfalls for those who want to hide things, right?
Right. So basically, sovereigns, states will have to fine-tune this privacy versus transparency. And like always in these big, delicate decisions, a fine balance is needed. So the modus vivendi, the general practice across the world will be that states will apply a certain level of self-restriction in this sense.
Perfect. Thank you for that. And Juana, yesterday when we were talking, you were saying that Capital One is going to acquire Discover. And I'm just really curious what you think that means you know, in the US for consumers and what it means for businesses?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot to unpack about this deal, but I think that from what we're hearing from the industry is the fact that this will basically birth an enormous credit card company competing with Visa and MasterCard in the US. So this is one of the things that we are hearing a lot at this point. In terms of maybe the benefits for Capital One, I think the idea that if Capital One is going to basically create a closed loop payments network, that is going to create a lot of competition in the industry, and it's going to benefit them a lot in the sense that they are going to communicate in a way directly with the merchants. So in this way, they can provide more interesting benefits and incentivize the consumer even better. So that in a way, I think will make other credit card companies to come up with new solutions and new propositions. So I think this is one thing. And when it comes to, well, speaking of competition, I think this is the biggest competition ever for MasterCard and Visa, if you ask me. And in terms of fintech, I think one of the reasons behind this deal is the fact that Capital One is, in a way, looking to fend off the competition from fintech companies who are coming with innovative and creative propositions. So I think this is the rationale behind this this acquisition, and I think it will be very interesting to see how the biggest fintech companies, such as maybe Klarna or PayPal, are going to react to this. Because, yeah, as I said, this is competition for them.
Thank you. When we spoke yesterday, David was mentioning, you know, it's so interesting to see that they want to own traditional rails instead of, you know, new ones. And David, you were talking about the business culture. Do you want to enlighten us a little bit there?
Right. So basically what's happening is this. The newcomers, the challengers, the fintechs in this particular segment, the mobile wallets, e-money institutions, they are basically building their own brand new disruptive rails. When you do a mobile wallet transaction, you don't need Visa, you don't need MasterCard, you don't need Discover. And the traditional incumbent, market leading, old style financial institutions would like to emulate this. They would like to build new rails as well, but organizationally, tactically, and strategically, very often they are unable to. So what remains? What remains for them, for the old guard, is actually to vertically and horizontally control and own more and more of the traditional rails. There is only one tiny little problem. Cards are outdated. So we don't need this tool for next decade payments. Therefore, this acquisition shows some sort of a tactical strategic trap. Meanwhile, it's perfectly understandable and it makes sense in the short and midterm.
Super. Thanks for that explanation. Another thing we discussed was, you know, that the EU is setting a deadline for instant payments regulation. And, you know, it can be kind of the timelines can be aggressive. So Juana or David, do you want to touch on this?
Yeah, I can share some insights. I mean, it's been I believe it's widely known by now that instant payments regulation was published in the official journal, and yeah, it's been a long time coming. I mean, it's been expected. We were all expecting this to happen, because if we look, for instance, if I'm correct, please correct me if I'm wrong. As of 2023, I know that around 15 or 17% of Euro credit transfers were instant. So we were kind of expecting for the European regulatory bodies to maybe lead the way to drive implementation of instant payments. So it happened. We have it here. It was published in the official journal. But what we're hearing from the industry right now, and we were kind of expecting that. So the idea is that the large banks, the tier one banks, they are already providing instant payments. But, and this is almost how much, 90% of payments account in Europe. So that's a lot. But there's also the remaining smaller banks who currently they will have to set up everything in order to prepare for the deadlines. And what we're hearing is that it is a bit difficult for them, and they will need to act quickly. So we see it and we hear from the industry that this might pose a problem. David, what are your thoughts? Maybe you have some tips and tricks for them.
Well, it's not easy, but let's start with the bigger picture. So I am a great believer in the European project. I am a great believer in the euro as a common currency. And I am a great, great believer in SEPO, the single euro payments area. And within SEPO, free instant payments are step by step becoming the standard. By the way, there is a partially external competitive pressure here, competitive price pressure, exactly coming from the mobile wallets. Mm-hmm. When you transfer peer-to-peer money within the universe of a mobile wallet, that is obviously instant and obviously free. Now, all in all, as a global picture, payments are getting commoditized. What is remaining the value driver? What is remaining the margin creator in payments if payments are getting commoditized, free, instant? What remains is data. That's why now we are talking about the century of data. And the bigger challenge for these incumbent large, mid-sized, and smaller banks, credit institutions, is how to turn data into money. Complying with regulations is hard enough, but the profit of the future will come from learning to turn data into value. And those banks which are succeeding in this, not easy, it's very, very hard, easy to say, extremely hard to pull off, those will be the winners of the next decade.
Any ideas that which banks might be forerunners in there now, or it's too hard to say?
Too early to call.
Yeah.
In fact, every single one of the licensed credit institutions globally, there are approximately 25,000 globally. From these 25,000, approximately 7,500 in the European economic area. Every one of those is currently struggling on shareholder level, board level, CEO level, executive management level, mid management level. Imagine being the CTO of a major
building
bank nowadays. It's extremely complex. You have to be Albert Einstein. go to work every single day. So this is too early to call, but this is why it's such a beautiful universe, such a beautiful market, because everyone is there trying.
Thank you for that addition. And now we're going to go to another merger. So we had talked about the Capital One earlier, but GoCardless is going to acquire Nuapay. So, Uwana, could you tell us a little bit about that? What's the rationale?
Well, I think this is actually a match made in heaven, if you ask me. What I see is that, and I think we all know that both companies are share the belief that account-to-account payments and open banking are going to change in a way, the way we process payments, the way we pay and the way we are being paid. And here are the papers. We also share the same belief because, yeah, we see that Nua Pay is an established player, is an account-to-account player and has a highly reputable customers. And I think it will play a central role in a way in it perfectly aligns with Go Cardless strategies and to accelerate their vision in a way, because Go Cardless, they have this vision of becoming the world's bank payment network. So I think Nua Pay is going to complement that that very well. And I think this will result in an amazing combination, both for domestic and international payments as well. And what we also see is that Go Cardless, it will enable for certain Go Cardless to maybe tap new verticals and maybe to, unlock new propositions and new use cases such as, payroll, insurance, gaming, gambling, and so on. So, yes, I do believe that this is going to be great.
Thanks for that. David, do you have any thoughts on this, or shall we go to the next topic, which I'm very excited about?
Only one sentence. This is a very nice piece of news because it's in fact synthesizing many things we are talking about nowadays: open banking, cost pressure, merger as a form of creating economy of scale. So it's a beautiful piece of news.
So the next topic that I was talking about that I'm excited about is the first cycle of digital disruption is over. Survival of the fittest now. So tell us all about this. Why is that? What's putting the pressure on?
Right. So basically, we are in a transition period in the world of fintech and therefore in the world of new finance. And this transition period is about the first era of fintech disruption nearing to an end. What is this first era of fintech disruption? Basically, from the 2008 financial crisis, when a window of opportunity opened for newcomers, challengers, disruptors, we are counting a 15-year cycle of disruption, as per described by Clayton Christensen, legendary professor of Harvard Business School. And that is around 2023-2024. Now, in this first 15-year period of disruption, we were in a near-zero interest rate environment across major economies, which means that earning $1 billion profit 20 years down the road is equally valuable as earning it now, spot. Zero interest rate means zero time value of money. However, we have moved away from this, and now we are in a more or less equilibrium, normal, historic average interest rate environment. And here, money has serious time value. So investors want short-term or prompt profit, or at least a credible promise of short-term or prompt profit. And this is a different ballgame. Fintech owners, investors have to come up with a different strategy. They have to present that their company can be short-term profitable.
So all those era of, you know, just trying to acquire clients without having a business model that shows a road to profitability, that's gone.
It's totally gone. Investors put their money into term deposits or risk-free assets and they earn a beautiful nominal return. So they will only invest into risky, speculative, creative, exponential endeavors when they have a rock-solid strategy.
Okay, so pressure on fintechs to get funding unless they can really have a great road to profitability. And then earlier we were talking about those smaller banks having troubles. And this I assume, also is putting pressure on those smaller banks.
Right. I mean, one of the ways to be profitable is to have economy of scale. This is a 5,000-year rule in financial services, in banking. And when you are small, you don't have economy of scale. So it's extremely hard to find the sufficient amount of money and invest it into successful digital transformation. Therefore, what we are expecting is a lot of mergers, acquisitions, strategic partnerships. Large is hard because it's complex. Small is hard because it lacks economy of scale. So there is no silver bullet.
Thank you. Okay, on to the U.S., where Lineage Bank was hit with an FDIC consent order over their BaaS, you know, the banking and service business. Juana, can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yes, of course. I mean, bank as a service is a topic very close to my heart. And if we look at this consent order, this is actually one of the latest in a series of consent orders in the past years, looking at smaller banks dealing with banks dealing with third-party risk. And it doesn't necessarily come, well, it doesn't come as a surprise, because if we look last year, for instance, prudential regulators, OCC and FDIC, they released some guidance for the banks on how to manage this risk. And I see that this is clearly showing that regulators are increasing focus on this area. We've seen similar cases. We've seen the case of Blue Ridge. We've seen the case of Choice Bank. And usually it has to do with maybe inadequate third-party risk management, but also failings when it comes to AML and BSA. So this is some of the, this is what appears to have led to the previous consent orders. If we look at Lineage and the recent consent orders, I think we kind of see new novel type of penalties, because apart from the bank being required to enhance its risk management program, but also being unable to onboard the new clients without permission in a way. We also see that this consent prohibits the bank to entering new lines of business or expanding its existing line of business that would result in 10% growth in total assets or more. In total assets or liabilities. So this is, I think, pretty novel. I don't think it's something that we see before, but if we look at, what is the key driver to that growth? I mean, if we do a little bit of research, we are going to realize that it's the deposits that were sourced through the bank as a service platform. So yes, I think this is very interesting, and we see the regulators taking different actions or becoming more and more involved in bank as a service business models. Wouldn't be surprised if we see similar actions taking place. However, I think embedded finance and banking as a service are here to stay. I think it's they are too good for any banks.
I'm just going to put my two cents worth in here. You know, like a company that has grown from 27 million in 2020 to 300 million in 2023.
That's usually a bad sign.
You know, what's going on there? So I can imagine that they're like, you can't grow over 10% in terms of your total assets or liabilities.
Yeah.
Now, you know, it's looking fishy. And last but not least, I want to go to another story, which is about the Commercial Bank of Ethiopia and how they had a glitch that let customers withdraw and transfer money that wasn't even in their account. David, can you tell us a little bit about this? And I know we've seen some of this before, because I believe there was one in Ireland a few months ago as well.
Right. So these glitches are very common, and they are more and more impactful because there are more and more tens of millions and hundreds of millions of people actively and primarily or even exclusively using these digital channels. So now the next question is why this is. And there are complex, multifaceted answers behind this. Lack of talent. Everyone is searching for IT talent. Also, the core banking systems are able to handle a certain level of complexity, but not necessarily infinite complexity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And complexity is getting higher and higher and higher in banking. More and more digital channels intertwined in an omni-channel manner. Also, regulators are waking up. Recently, Monetary Authority of Singapore has started to impose fines on banks having over 120 minutes of outage in any 365-day period. Or, for example, wow, the European Central Bank, this year in 2024, first time in history, is starting to run cyber resilience stress tests. And in fact, over 200 licensed banks across the European Union will go through these stress tests.
It's about time.
Resilience, and the results will be published. I am very, very curious and not entirely calm about this. So new technologies are very, very useful and they are a must, but they are also changing the risk landscape. That's why one of my best-selling global training programs is about risk management in the age of financial technologies, and bankers, regulators, supervisors love this training program.
So I can't help myself, but you talked about the talent crunch, and yesterday we were talking about how Monzo, the folks that had started that, have forming a startup that makes coders extinct. And to what extent do you think that this has to do, you know, software writing software with a lack of talent?
Right. So software 2.0, one of the most beautiful manifestations of advanced artificial intelligence, is something I'm a great believer of, exactly because of the relative shortage of coding and IT talent. Let's outsource it, but this time let's outsource it to AI. And actually, these advanced artificial intelligence algorithms are capable of writing software based on human instructions and parameters, as well as improving it, extending it, debugging it. So this is a beautiful, brave new world, robots building, robots software writing software.
I couldn't agree more. And with that, I'd like to thank both of you for being on today. News from the FinTech Front, March 2024. A lot of interesting things going on, and I'm sure next month it'd be the same. But I really enjoy speaking to you, not only today, but in our calls beforehand. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Breaking Banks Europe, a Provoke Media podcast in cooperation with FinTech Stage. Don't forget to tweet us out, shout out, or post to the team at Breaking Banks EU on Twitter. If there's something or someone you'd like to hear on our cast, let us know. See you next week on Breaking Banks Europe.